Welcome back, or welcome for the first time, to the Anything But Quiet Time podcast. We are Rochelle and Carter.
And I'm really glad if this is somebody's first time in listening or watching the Anything But Quiet Time podcast,
that's right,
which you can now do on YouTube, that we are going to start off right off the bat with talking about the bathroom.
The bathroom?
Yes.
Okay.
Now, there is, in our facility where we are sitting right now, there is a sign.
Yes.
In the bathroom. Carter, do you know what it says?
It says that the, and I'm glad it doesn't actually attribute the Bible, because the Bible doesn't say it.
Right.
But the phrase, godliness is next to cleanliness, or cleanliness is next to godliness.
Cleanliness is next to godliness.
I don't know where that came from. It's not in the Bible.
I think a woman one day
just said,
was trying to put the fear of God in her children to wash their hands, for crying out loud. That's probably where it came from. But then I was reading through something in Deuteronomy, and it made me go, could this be?
Okay. All right.
So here it is. This is about keeping your army camp acceptable.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
Definitely applicable. Okay. Let's go ahead and
set up a place. Now, this is chapter 23, starting with verse 12. Set up a place outside the camp to be used as a toilet area. Make sure that you have a small shovel in your equipment. I love that this is written in Deuteronomy. It's so precise. When you go out to the toilet area, as foretold just a moment ago, use the shovel to dig a hole. Then, after you relieve yourself, bury the waste in the hole.
Okay. Yeah, okay.
You must keep your camp clean of filthy and disgusting things. The Lord is always present in your camp, ready to rescue you and give you victory over your enemies. But if he sees something disgusting in your camp,
yeah,
he may turn around and leave.
Okay.
And so I'm wondering,
yeah,
could this have been maybe the start of cleanliness is next to godliness? Otherwise, God's not next to you.
Right.
If it's disgusting.
Well, that I will grant. As of course, I'm the voice of authority, apparently. I'm the only other voice on this podcast. I have to do it. Could it have come from that?
Right.
Who knows? And maybe.
Maybe.
And what an insightful thing.
And bring a shovel.
Is it relevant to today? No. No. Because you're going to go old covenant on us,
right,
on things and laws that don't apply anymore when we're in the new covenant.
I'm going
to
say,
no, that sign in our bathroom needs to be taken down.
If I had your mom and your wife here, both of them, I think would be in agreeance that even if it's not written in the new covenant,
okay,
Jesus would still have not left messiness, because Mary, his mother, would have been still under the old covenant law and would have taught him, one takes a shovel
and
buries their mess.
All right. Was that true then when it wasn't an army camp? I mean, no. Well, I mean, but
there
it wasn't.
There are established locations for doing this.
Well, yes, there's that.
And if you're not in an established location, you should be taking care of Israel's camp in general. The world is your camp.
Okay. This is where people talk about stretching the text.
Yes.
Stretching the text for more than what actually applies to.
I thought I'd give it a whirl.
It was fun.
For moms everywhere.
It was fun.
Who've been like, well, I think it is in the Bible. Maybe you
just
can
tell
attribute
them that and then start and see where it goes.
And start with it. People are going to need a shovel through this podcast. What are going to need? All right.
We talk about what we're going through spiritually and in our quiet times each and every week, and fun stuff like fun discussions like that. Ours at our small group this week was a bit more serious. And it's one of those hard questions that I think most people in churches just won't really talk about on like church discipline.
Okay.
What do you do if somebody is in unrepentant sin? Are you actually in today's society going to say, you can't come to church here anymore?
So give me an example of unrepentant sin. They're choosing to live.
Let's say an open affair. An affair that they refuse to go back to their spouse. Some of the things that critics will point to, well, you're saying, what about a pastor with an ego problem? Or what about somebody with an anger problem? There are certainly hard ones that toe the line where it's like, but I can't quite say that they're an unrepentant sin, or is it just flare-ups? But it's like, hey, if you've left your wife and you're living with another woman, okay, well, that's clearly, you need to stop that and come back into community, or we're going to treat you like an unbeliever,
yeah,
as scripture says. And so I love this quote from Spurgeon first. I saw a friend post, and then I'll get into the text of 1 Corinthians that we were talking about.
Can I just stop? There is a moment in The Office that you just made me think of.
Oh, okay.
Okay, so The Office.
And this is where the Anything But Quiet Time podcast can go. No, to The Office now.
It could. Yeah. If there's something that you can lift out of that show and kind of give, I don't know, to well round the words that you just shared. So here is an incredible moment. And I don't think you got this far in the seasons because you didn't watch any where Michael Scott wasn't in there anymore. But there's this moment where Jim and Pam are the two main love interests on the show.
Yeah.
And they're married and they've got kids. And there's this moment in a later season where he is sent by work to go with several of the Office cast members to Florida. And they're going to they're going to do this big spiel for Dunder Mifflin's latest adventure. And that's...
They're going to a work conference.
That's all you need to know.
Okay.
One of the people on this work conference trip is Pam's temporary replacement while Pam is on maternity leave. Mm-hmm. And she is asked to go on this company thing as well. And we hear her talking into the phone to a friend. Well, I think I'm gonna have some fun with Jim. And, you know, as the audience, we're like, oh, no, she didn't. Mm-hmm. Oh, yes, she did. She has plans. And so when they're in the hotel, you know, he gets this knock at his door. And she's like, hey, I'm sorry. The AC in my room is broken. I am sweltering in there while they get it fixed. Is it cool? Can I just stay in here for a second? And he had the game on. He's like, you know, immediately he's hesitant. It's an attractive woman. She's single. He's married. And he does something that we've often paused the show and used these moments with our children as, what is the right thing to do here? Mm-hmm. You know, and we'll do that with our kids. But Jim's decision is, sure, it's fine. And the entire time that she is clearly making the moves on him, she keeps acting like she's not. And like, even when he addresses it, he's like, okay, I don't know what you're thinking, but I'm a married man. I'm not interested in whatever. Jim, how could you think I would be doing that? It's that like, how dare you confront me with something that is obvious, but then throwing that little bit of shade of maybe it's not what you thought it was. I think the world is getting really good at misleading themselves. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Well, maybe in scripture, it didn't mean that.
Oh, sure.
You know?
Right.
Because that's crazy. I mean, why would I jump to the conclusion of that? But it's clearly that, you know? I don't know. Just that scene and watching his discomfort and thinking, oh my word, I'm so sorry. I leapt to that conclusion that you were trying to seduce me. I don't know what I was thinking. I apologize. And then when she goes and takes a shower in his room, he's like, oh my gosh. And he calls Dwight and Dwight comes in there and it's this whole funny thing. So it all works out, but get out of my room. Mm-hmm. Get out of my room. It's like, now I clearly know what's happening. And she's still going, no, it's not what you think. We've got to be on guard with that kind of stuff.
Sure.
Especially people, I feel like I am one of those people that gives the benefit of the doubt to a fault. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I've been so naive so many times sometimes it's a gift because you want people to be authentic. You want them to be sincere. But if people really are struggling with an area and they've even duped themselves, no, it's not a problem. You know what I mean?
Sure. Yeah.
I feel like that's kind of the territory where you were starting to go. People sometimes maybe have even duped themselves into not thinking, this isn't a repentant sin. You don't know my circumstances.
Well, the text that we went over is 1 Corinthians 5, and it talks about sexual morality right up front, where just FYI with kids, you have a man in your church that is living in sin with his stepmother. Mm. But then it goes on, you know, Paul is writing to this church in Corinthians. So he's talking to the church when he says in verse 2, you are so proud of yourselves, but you should be mourning in sorrow and shame, and you should remove this man from your fellowship. Mm. And to be honest, this could be any church. I think bigger churches, quote, mega churches, are more susceptible to it. And I'm not picking on those because I think I'm technically a part of a mega church. I think my mega church is really not that big. It's more than 1,500 or 2,000 people is considered a mega church,
okay.
Which is crazy. It's not what you think of. It's not the 15,000 right. people. But I think the bigger church you have, the easier this can go. Not everybody knows everybody.
Right.
It's kind of just a show up and Sunday thing. If you want to get connected, you kind of do that on your own. It's not, nobody's going to know if you're new walking in there. Mm-hmm. And you could have this church, really any size, where they're proud of what they're doing.
Yeah.
And we got this cool program. We got our new food pantry. We got a great youth ministry. And there's no engaging in the spiritual health in the congregant members.
Yeah.
And that can really go to a dangerous place. And so it's one where Paul is going on to say, you need to cut this from your midst. And I think it's a hard conversation because we're all sinners. So when you give the benefit of the doubt, you're like, I mean, we can't say you can't come to church here. We can't say that I can't ever see you again, right? Mm-hmm. Well, there are boundaries that should take place. And what I really like is I came to understand it later when he says, don't even eat with such people. We have to keep in mind that he's talking to the church, mm-hmm. and that at the time the Lord's Supper was more than likely a meal. Mm-hmm. He's saying they're not a part of this church community. Now, he didn't say, hey, you want to try to still pour into them one-on-one and you right. go to lunch with them? That's not what that's really talking about. And so we have to still continue to, as Galatians 6:1 says, gently and humbly correct somebody that is in sin. Mm-hmm. And if they're unrepentant and they won't listen, and you know, maybe you've known about the order that Jesus talks about, you go to them, that's if they sinned against you, two or three witnesses, then go to the church leadership. If they still won't, you treat them like an unbeliever. Mm. And I think it's an interesting phrasing here in verses 4 and 5. Again, this is 1 Corinthians 5, where it says, you must call a meeting with the church. Actually, this is just verse 5. Then you must throw this man out and hand him over to Satan so that his sinful nature will be destroyed. Mm. But then look at this hope. Mm. And he himself will be saved on the day the Lord returns. Mm. The hope is that, like the prodigal son, the consequences will make him come to his senses, mm-hmm. is the hope. You don't want to just exclude because now I'm better than them, that kind of attitude. It's I sincerely hope that you find your way back to God. And we've done all we can, and you're not included in this community. We hope that this shunning of sorts will get you to your senses and come back. And I love that this is, and we kind of just kind of, chat about this, but I think really this quote, it speaks well here, and it speaks well of just unbelievers too, people outside of the church. I love how Spurgeon said this. Charles Spurgeon, great theologian of the couple hundred years ago. If sinners be damned, at least let them leap to hell over our dead bodies. Mm. And if they perish, let them perish with our arms wrapped about their knees, imploring them to stay. Mm. If hell must be filled, let it be filled in the teeth of our exertions, and let not one go unwarned and unprayed for.
That's so good and powerful and makes you want to make sure that you are living that integritous lifestyle. I think part of that has to be the respecting of the boundaries that you've laid too.
Sure.
Because otherwise, if there is no boundary laid, then how do you even measure integrity?
Yeah.
And, you know, in the silly instance of, I hope it didn't feel like I took it off the rails there with that whole story about, you know, Dunder Mifflin in the office. But if Jim had not pushed this woman out of his living arrangements there at the hotel and dismissed her because he was concerned about, well, I care for her as a person. I hope she's not going to be, something bad's going to happen to her. No, he had to think about the sanctity of his marriage.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that institution being the church, we have to think about the sanctity. What has God called us to? That covenant marriage for he and his wife. I need to protect what is current and what is now.
Yeah.
And if people are not going to respect the sanctity of this, then I'm going to have to lay that boundary And you're going to have to understand that. And it's not because I don't think you're a nice person, but this is where the line is.
Well, we can see it with certain extreme instances with, let's say, drug addiction, mm-hmm. right? You know, and I mean, I'm not saying it's a hard, and I'm not saying people don't kind of dip into both sides of it even at times, but we know collectively that enabling right. in that situation is not good.
Right.
Loving is. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of clear to see, and it doesn't seem mean when you, and generally, again, it doesn't seem as mean when you're just saying, no, I'm not enabling. Mm-hmm. And yet, I think when it comes to church discipline, well, that just seems mean. They can't come anymore? They can't come to church? That's mean. Yeah. You know, the news channel, depending on the situation, news channel on your doorstep Monday morning, are you saying people can't come to church here? Aren't we all broken? Aren't we all sinners? And I think it really has to do with, like for our church, for example, what they said in this is also, it was cool because it was the sermon and then it was our small group and we talked about this same passage twice. And one of our pastors, when teaching this, said, we'll let anybody come to, quote, big church, but they're not going to lead, they're not going to teach, they're not going to be involved in, like, deeper things. But even that has extreme circumstances where there's been some safety issues where you're not allowed back here. Mm-hmm. And so it has to be, we understand that every situation is going to be a little bit different, but in general, it is wanting people to be here when they can and understanding that we don't want to enable in the places that we shouldn't enable.
Well, I mean, you wouldn't be a very good hospital if you allowed people with broken bones to come in and just stay that way.
Sure. That's true.
So
that's a good point.
We're not, God didn't start out creation as broken. It started whole and it was good. And then it got broken because we backpedaled.
Sure.
We didn't forward pedal with him.
Yeah.
And he's been asking us to obey. It's not like I'm asking you to obey rules that are bad for you.
Sure.
But it sure sounds like it when you get the protesting of even my own spirit of like, I don't want to do it. But this is for your good.
Yeah.
And the enemy has taken it and twisted it to make it the opposite of what you think it should be. And it's like, wait a second. And I was thinking about this morning, when God created the earth and gave us everything he gave us, he was the only entity that gave us anything. Mm-hmm. How is it that Eve at first and then Adam would receive alter information, you know, like something other than what the person who gave them everything they know and has given them love
right,
and comfort right. and good fruit and food and the company of fun animals and all of this stuff and each other for crying out loud. Why would you listen?
Yeah.
Why would you even to something like, what has that person ever done for me? If you've ever said that statement or at least thought it in your head, what do they ever do for me? What did this serpent ever do for Eve that would convince her to think other than what God would say?
It's a half truth and a question.
Yes.
Did God really say that? And there's a big question in today's society. Did God really say this on this topic? Mm-hmm. And I think where that half truth is now, in our culture and in even Christian culture, aren't we just supposed to love? Aren't you supposed to love? Aren't you supposed to be loving?
Yeah.
And when you say something true and bold and seemingly harsh about boundaries and sin and wrong, then it just seems like you're, as people say, there's no hate like Christian love, right? Thanks, guys. And it's like, no, don't be wrong. There have been Christians do terrible things in the name of God.
Oh, absolutely.
Or so-called Christians. But there are boundaries and there is right and wrong. And love is not just let somebody do whatever they want.
Well, and love is a person. Love is God.
Yeah.
And that's what it says. So if we are backpedaling away from what God is, then we're backpedaling away from what love is. Uh-huh. So maybe our questions should be rephrased with these friends who are, some of them, I think, truly curious. But if your God is about love, then why wouldn't he? Well, wait a second. Let's state that he is love because he is. Mm-hmm. And he is asking you to do this. Then wouldn't that be coming from, that would stem from his love. Mm-hmm. It wouldn't stem from a place of, I don't want you to have.
Right, right.
This is, I'm only out to get you. I'm only looking to discipline you as a people.
Sure.
It's about, this is for your good. So that's the rephrasing that we always have to do with the questions that we maybe even have. It's like, just kind of rephrase them a little bit. Well, why would this happen? Well, first of all, why wouldn't it happen to you? Mm-hmm. This world is broken and things happen to people because this is the way it is.
Yeah.
And unfortunately that stemmed from, the first choice, backpedaling away from God, right? A broken planet because of that one act of disobedience. Sure. You know, I want to always be pedaling towards him. So if God is love, and we know that he is, then the things that he asks, demands, commands are coming out of a place of love. And we see the things that happen in the Old Testament and we are like shocked by so much of what takes place. But what we fail to look at, we're looking at the tree instead of the entire forest. Mm-hmm. If they had just obeyed.
Sure. Yeah.
We wouldn't have had the issue. If the guy had done what the rules were when Joshua first went into Jericho, bring all that stuff here, we're destroying it all, it's not going to stick around. But no, he goes and hides the stuff.
Yeah.
After encountering the sins of so many of his family members because they died off in the wilderness, and he still goes in and does the opposite. We are backpedaling constantly. Well, why should I? No, the question is, why wouldn't you?
And I like that you talk about obedience, because the question nowadays is, why, how could a good God send people to hell? Mm. And I've heard it asked, because it's both. God is loving, but I've heard it asked in the reverse. That's all just as true. Mm. How could a just God send anyone to heaven?
Right.
And the fact is—
because we demand justice.
That, yes, and right? We do, right?
We do.
If there's an injustice, we want justice. Right. God is just. There's been an order set, his nature, and we don't live up to that. Thank God for grace. Thank God for Jesus dying on a cross, that then we can be seen as righteous. We talked a little bit about that last week. Yeah. And I guess I think this Charles Spurgeon quote is so good, because I think about the Christian community. I think about the Christian music community. I think about a lot where we will go one side or the other, and it's too harsh or it's too lovey progressive, all that stuff. Mm. And this is a good balance. Now, I think a lot of people would still not want to talk about it, to be honest with you, because it mentions hell. I think it's such a good balance of the way he's saying it. Mm-hmm. Is acknowledging the reality, acknowledging the realness that people will be apart from God for all eternity. But let it not make me bitter. Let it not make me pious. And let me make sure that I'm loving somebody all the way till the end, whether it's through sending them out and the devices and their consequences, whether it's be through sharing the gospel, through being loving in everything that I do when I'm around an unbeliever at work or whatever it might be. And let me truly combine those where I know the reality. I know what's at stake. I don't just sit here and go, Jesus is just love, man. Everybody's getting in. No. That's not true. Mm-hmm. But I don't want to be what you see often. Not that they're not speaking truth, but street preachers that can be, you're damned. And they're just shouting, and they're, no, let me, just like Charles Spurgeon said, have my arms wrapped around you, trying to keep you from it.
Yeah, that's the love definition, is not how we define it, but how the character of God is. Because if he is love and he is love, then we don't get the right to speak into what that should look like. Mm,
yeah.
We don't. So it's like, well, what is God? This is who he is. This is what he says. And if he is love, then these things are loving and kind and good. And it may not, quote, feel that way, but we've been taught and sold a bill of goods for a while now that is adverse to what God has said. And we've been listening to the serpent for a while.
Sure.
And I don't want to keep backpedaling in the name of sympathy, because yes, Jesus saw from the cross people grieving what he was doing, and they were just distraught. And if I'm distraught with what I see before me and it keeps me from doing what is true, then I'm losing what redemption is meant to be. Mm-hmm. Like, Jesus didn't get off the cross to come alongside the grieving person, but he did comfort them with his words, didn't he?
So sure.
like I can get a pattern there from him and say, okay, Lord, you want me to be sympathetic with people, but not at the cost of the cross.
Yeah. Yeah. That's true.
So that's really important. And, I really loved what you shared today. So thank you.
I saw that quote and I was like, man, and it went along with what we just happened to talk about in church. And it was like, that is so fantastic. Charles Spurgeon, again, his name. Thank you. This has been fun.
Can I call him Chuck Spurgeon?
You'll have to ask him probably when you meet him in heaven.
Like I said, I'll bring a shovel.